everyone, and welcome to episode number 11 of the Parenting With podcast. I'm your host, Lisa Jacobus. So I know on last week's show, I promised an episode on how to get our kids to listen. But in this last week, since that episode aired, everything in our country has changed. Schools, daycares, restaurants, businesses have all closed. Parents and children are now home, isolating from friends and family in order to help prevent the spread of COVID-19. So here to talk about and how to manage the stress and anxiety of this all is Ben Hilliard and Jessica Lyons. Ben is a licensed clinical mental health counselor, and Jessica is a licensed marriage and family therapist. Together, they have a combined 48 years of clinical experience. Ben sees his clients at the Center for Collaborative Change in Exeter, New Hampshire, working with kids, families, and adults, and consulting frequently with local schools. In September, he did a TEDx talk on his vision for innovating the delivery of mental health care for children. Jessica Lyons has a private practice in Exeter, working with children, families, and couples, is an adjunct professor at the University of New Hampshire in the Graduate School, Department of Human Development and Family Studies. In 2019, Ben and Jess co-founded ALOFT, Integrated Wellness, providing psychotherapy and wellness services using an integrative care methodology. I'm so grateful that I was able to speak with them tonight, and I know this is one conversation that every parent will want to hear. All right. Thank you, Jessica and Ben, for being here tonight. This is a topic that I feel like is on everyone's minds, and I'm so glad to have you here. So before we begin, can you tell us each a little bit about yourself? And Ben, if you don't mind starting.
Oh, no problem. My name is Ben Hilliard. I'm a psychotherapist in Exeter. I've been working in the field for about 28 years. Worked in schools, community mental health. I own a private practice. I've been in private practice for probably 20 years, and then joined my colleague Jessica Lyons in developing ALOFT Integrated Wellness.
Great, great. And Jessica, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yes, I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. I have a practice in Exeter where I work with kids, individuals, and families. I also teach as an adjunct professor at UNH in the Grad School, Department of Human Development and Family Studies. I'm a mom to a first grader and a fourth grader. So very much living all of this right now. I think everything we're going to talk about tonight, I think I'm very much in the thick of it. And just happy to be here chatting with you and hopefully providing some support to parents tonight.
Wonderful. Wonderful. I'm so glad to have you guys here. You know, the last 6 days, it's only been about 6 days, I think, since our whole world have been turned upside down, even though we've all been following the coronavirus for the last month or two. And there's so many feelings, so many different reactions from parents, from kids. And what can you tell us about what we should be saying as parents, what we should be doing, what we shouldn't be saying, what should we be saying? We need your help. So.
I would first direct parents to a number of online resources that have been released this week. There are some from the CDC, American Academy of Pediatrics, which really give you a solid overview of how to respond to kids based on their age and stage of development. So you always want to take that into account. What that means for parents that might be a little challenging is if you have kids staggered at different age groups and different stages of development, you might need to have more than one conversation. So there's sort of the family narrative, there's the family story, but then you probably need to debrief with individual kids based on their stage of development, whether or not they're developmentally typical, things along those lines.
And if I could add, kids today are really well informed, maybe more than we want them to be. Just last week, I had a kid come in and say that they were playing Corona tag in their school playground. So it's also important not to lie to them, but also be developmentally appropriate to them. And it's incredibly important to, you know, answer those questions developmentally, and also kind of end them when they're actually done being curious.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah, it was interesting because today I was in a teleconference and you could hear my daughter coughing in the background and people were laughing and, you know, sort of making jokes about, you know, oh, does she have it? And I said, oh, she doesn't know what's going on. Now she's almost 4. And we did tell her that, you know, there's a flu going around or something like the flu. And we want to make sure that we stay healthy and that everyone else stays healthy. So we're going to be staying home from school for a few weeks. And she seemed okay with that answer. And I asked her if she had questions and whatnot. But my coworkers laughed because they said, she probably knows more than what you think she knows.
Absolutely.
So
that's a great baseline assumption for all parents to bring into parenting, and in particular into parenting in a time like this, that kids often know way more than we think they know, and they don't always volunteer the information. One of my professors in grad school used to say often that kids are excellent observers and really poor interpreters.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. And you, I think it was Ben, you mentioned, you know, not lying. So what are some things that parents can do, taking in mind the developmental piece, but, you know, for folks with younger kids, what is a good way to talk to them about this?
So sitting with kids this whole week, and after the announcements of, and the difficulties with the coronavirus, I often look at their body language to actually tell me when they're done learning about it, when they have too much information, when they don't have enough information, because it's really a balance between the anxiety or the fear of the unknown or the fear of too much to know, knowing too much. You're also getting impact from other kids. So if you have a kid who's your child doesn't know much, but then other children are informing them, they're getting information from all different sources, and you really want the primary source to be from the parent, not the news, not NPR in the background. You want it primarily being coming from the parent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I also think too, when parents don't create an opportunity to start that dialogue and be in that dialogue with their kids will go seeking information from other sources. I know I've talked to a lot of parents this week, and even with my own kids, we've set up sort of some virtual like Skyping or FaceTiming so that they can have that peer interaction and maybe show what Lego castle they built or, you know, things along those lines. And even in just small moments like that, I think kids will naturally gravitate towards the topic or bring it up if they're information seeking. So when parents check in regularly and have that dialogue, I think you reduce the likelihood that kids will go information seeking.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can I add a little bit? So parents also have to look at the differences between, you know, sort of like the routines that they had in the household prior to. Everything is changing nowadays. They're home for 3 weeks and they've probably never been home for more than 3 weeks other than summer. But, you know, sleep routines, family conflicts that build, increased difficulty between siblings, even opposite side where they're sort of more isolated and they're not as communicative. So you kind of have to look at all sorts of, you know, factors to kind of understand what the child needs.
Mm-hmm. Great. And for those parents that child may be struggling with some anxiety at their baseline and then this happens, what do you have to say to those parents that children may be struggling with some pretty significant anxiety?
First, I'd say hug them because they're having, you know, much more isolation and they're not getting the regular connections between other adults. But not to push our own profession, but get them into counseling.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for a lot of kids, this is going to spike anxiety. So, well, adults too, right? So you're going to have sort of two cohorts. You're going to have some kids that already have sort of a heightened baseline anxiety, and this might, you know, ramp it up quite a bit. the good thing is some of those kids might already have some skills that they've been utilizing to manage anxiety. And so if you found, like, let's say, for example, you have a kid who tends to be a little shy or maybe a little clingy, and you've already been coaching them through that and supporting them through that, go back to what skills have worked for them in other anxiety provoking situations and remind them, remember that time you had a really hard time going to that birthday party and we came up with a plan, and by the time you got there, you were so happy you went. What can we use from that situation in this situation? And then with kids where it maybe might feel like it's coming out of the blue or it's more situational, I think this is a profound opportunity to really kind of help your child understand what anxiety is, what stress does to our body. I often like to say to kids, where is this in your body or where is it showing up? Is it in your belly? Is it in your chest? Okay, let's see if we can do a couple of things. And then we're going to check back in with your body because your body's working really hard to communicate some things with you. So you can really use it as an opportunity to just really boost their resilience across the board. I don't think any of us would prefer for this to be the context that we're doing that work with our kids. But I think at the end of the day, all of these are experiences that are normal, natural parts of life. And these are things that we're meant as parents to give our kids practice at.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I touched upon this on my last week's episode about, you know, this could be an opportunity for our kids to develop those disappointment muscles. So I know this week I've been getting a lot of questions from parents about how to deal with the disappointment about having to tell their child that they're going to need to cancel their Florida trip in for April vacation, and just all sorts of different events that kids are not going to be able to participate in. How do parents approach these conversations, and how, you know, without sort of instilling fear or more anxiety in the child?
I think it's really important with disappointment in general for parents to process a little bit of their own emotion around it first, because I tend to find that really loving, committed parents want to avoid having to share information with their kids where their kids experience disappointment. And some parents even feel like that's really their job, to go out of their way to protect against their children experiencing disappointment. In the big picture of all of this, it's our job to help our kids learn how to practice disappointment. And that means exposing them to it. And that means coaching them through it. And this is one of those huge opportunities to do that. And disappointments can be big and they can be small. They can be as small as, my friend was supposed to come over today and now they can't. They can be as big as, we've been talking about a Disney trip for months and months and months, and we have our t-shirts picked out and now we're not going to get to go. So I think first for parents to spend a little bit of time just sort of processing or sitting with their own struggles around having to share information with their kids that leads to disappointment. And again, going back to stages of development. So with younger kids, you really just give them a hug and you sit with them in the disappointment and you validate their feelings. You say, I understand. I know this is so hard. I think we want to be careful not to then say, I'm having a hard time with this too. We really want to just let it be about them for a little bit, and check in frequently and remind them that it will be okay. And we will get to do this fun thing again at some point. I wish I could tell you exactly when, but for right now, here's what I can tell you. We're not going to be able to take that trip. We're going to think of some really fun things to do home. If we're still at home, we could build a fort. We could watch movies. You know, little kids, you can redirect fairly easily. You know, I feel like I'm sort of finally outgrowing that stage where taking my kids for ice cream could solve almost any problem. those are magical days when you can just redirect your kids to ice cream. With older kids, especially those late middle school and the teenager kids, I think this is a really good time, again, to validate the disappointment, to sit with them in that a little bit, if, you know, if they'll take a hug, if they'll take a little snuggle, but also kind of say, you know what, here's the hard thing. This is a situation that really isn't about us. This is a situation where we need to kind of step up for other people and really take in what other people are needing, what our country's needing, what our community's needing. And so this situation kind of isn't about us. It is sad, it is disappointing, but this is one of those times where this is the right thing to do. And I know that you might not agree with us on the call that we make, but I'm going to ask that you kind of get on board with this is the plan, and you're allowed to be sad, you're allowed to be mad, you're allowed to have a million questions, but I just need to let you know that this is the decision we've made.
Great.
And I would add that it's our job as parents to help prepare our kids for the future. There's going to be much bigger disappointments in their lives, you know, say it's a breakup or, you know, didn't get into the right college, the favorite college, things like that. I see these things as just building resilience, building habits that will help them deal with these things in the future. And that kind of gives me as a parent, it gives me sometimes this sort of like, oh, geez, I don't want to talk to him about this, but you know, better I deal with it now than just let it not be addressed and build and become a bigger issue.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so hard when the day-to-day is so stressful, but I really feel like these are some really big opportunities for us as parents to really help develop that resiliency in these kids. Because if they can get through this, they're going to be able to get through a lot in their life, for sure.
Without a doubt. And, you know, avoidance only increases risk factors, right? So avoidance will increase anxiety. Avoidance will increase many other factors around stress, right? So showing our kids that we're there for them and we're in it with them, but also that we know they can handle it. So when you say to a kid, I'm going to be direct with you, or I know this is really hard, and I know fully that you're going to find a way to handle this, and I'm going to do my best to help you handle it. There are a lot of kids right now that I've been talking to who are doing the math and realizing that they might not get to have a birthday party because their birthday is in 3 weeks. And their birthday might be just at home with their family for the 25th day in a row. What we don't want to do is say you're fine or get over it or it's not that big of a deal. Do you realize what other people are dealing with right now? So it's that stroke and a kick. It's, I know this is so hard. I know this might be a little scary. Can you tell me more about how you're doing? And I want to listen to you. I want to be there for you. And I know that you can handle this and we're going to get through it.
So I'll give you an example of my own parenting. Both of my daughters, had, their scrapes and bruises, and they both had their little broken arms or their stitches in their chin and stuff like that. I chose to do the approach of, would you rather not know anything about what's going to happen at the hospital, or do you want to know everything? And they would say to me, oh, how about a lot, not everything? And so I was taking my daughter into the OR for a little operation, and I forgot one piece, and that set her off. But when I took my daughter to get stitches, I was like, okay, it's going to hurt here and here, but the rest of the time it's not going to hurt. And she was like, okay, I'm ready. So we got those things done. So it was, for at least my kids, the knowledge of what was coming gave them predictability, and that predictability enabled them to be able to deal with their anxiety, or for us to deal with anxiety together.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
If I could add, one more thing about anxiety, one of the things that I see in my office a lot is anxiety comes out in the fight or flight or play possum. And a lot of kids will come out with anger, mm-hmm. and then they'll get punished for the anger. But the anger might actually be that fight, and they actually might be showing anxiety. So it's, you have to actually see both sides or all three of those sides in these difficult times.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I posted on the Parenting Win Facebook page recently, the iceberg, and what we see above the surface is not always what's going on below the surface. And another positive discipline educator had created one specific to what's going on with the coronavirus, and how, a child who is refusing to do their work, their schoolwork during the day. Yes, it could be that they just don't want to do the schoolwork, but it could be that they're going to their phones, they're going to these ways of just numbing out and tuning out because they're dealing with some other stuff. They're dealing with that anxiety of what's going on. So do you guys have anything else to add to that?
Well, I would also add too, is that we got to be careful with just the knee-jerk reaction to pull away all social media and all video games, because for some kids, that's a coping mechanism that they absolutely need at this time. And I'm not I mean, for me and my family, we had no video games during the week, no TV during the week. I pity my kids having to grow up with a therapist. Right. But, you know, they need some connection. They're not going to school anymore. They're not being able to go across the street. They may think the virus is over here, over there. So we have to thoughtfully kind of balance all those things.
Mm-hmm. Great. Yeah, that actually leads me to something else I wanted to talk about is, you know, what are some coping strategies that parents can use to sort of get through this? I know you guys you created sort of a little cheat sheet for parents, and it's awesome, and I'll be sure to share it with folks as well. But what are some things that you would say would be, you know, the top five that parents really...
The top five?
Yeah.
Yeah. So first and foremost, you know, take a deep breath and try to get into a new normal for now and communicate that to your kids. Communicate that among the other parents at home. Right? Okay, this is our new normal for now. Is it a little weird? Yeah. Is it a little overwhelming or boring or whatever? Sure. But this is going to be our new normal for now. And so even as straightforward as all members of the household by a certain time of the morning need to be dressed and brush your teeth and be ready for the day. You know, this isn't a snowstorm. When we get one of those big snowstorms and we're home for 2 or 3 days in a row, many of us enjoy lounging around in PJs and watching TV and letting some rules slide. And that is okay in a snowstorm model, but this is not a snowstorm. So we need a new normal. So maintaining some structure, I think it's totally okay if the structure we have right now does not look exactly like the structure we had before. And there's no way it could, right? There's absolutely no way it could. So especially with those older kids who are most likely sleep deprived because we make them get up so early for their school schedule, let them sleep in a little bit, but still have kind of a structure of the expectation is by 9 o'clock, you have eaten breakfast, you're dressed, your teeth are brushed, you know, something along those lines. And as Ben was talking about social media, one of the things I have been kind of going back to over and over again in my mind is that before this past week, we often spoke so much about how social media can be damaging and detrimental to mental health. We all of a sudden are in this new reality where it actually can be extremely helpful for our mental health if we utilize it in thoughtful, mindful, intentional ways. So I can think of one family that I spoke to recently who mentioned that they've started this new ritual of playing a card game every night with grandparents who are older, who need to not leave their home. And so they didn't want the kids to miss out on the connection with the grandparents. They're worried about the grandparents. They're all stuck at home. So they started this lovely ritual. And I actually asked them if I could share it with other families because I thought it was so brilliant. Of every night, these two households, including children, do a Skype card game together. Things like that are really powerful. So this is an example where social media can actually help our mental and emotional health, in particular platforms that allow for live interaction. So a little bit different than maybe just Instagram or just texting, but letting kids show each other their Lego creations or maybe do some of their learning together. We still, obviously parents still want to have parameters around it and, you know, restrictions and consider safety and things along those lines. But I think factoring in social media, for example, into part of the schedule and the routine, in some families, what that might look like is saying, okay, during the day, the expectation is that you do reading for this many minutes and then you go outside for a little bit. And then later on, you can have a half an hour of, you know, whatever social media that might be. I'm going to let Ben talk to you. One more that I want to throw in. If I'm at 3 out of 5 right now, sorry, Ben, I stole that third one. would be, I think play is so powerful. And it doesn't matter how old your kids are. Find a way to play. We as adults need to play. We need to log off. We need to take a deep breath. So I would, in everyone's new normal for a little while, schedule in some playtime with your kids, with your family, whatever can give you a nice little distraction and maybe let everybody laugh a little bit.
Mm-hmm. So I'll put mine in one, but it's kind of a long one if I can. Spare with me. So I found this tool. It's called the Healthy Mind Platter by Dr. Dan Siegel, S-I-E-G-E-L. And it's kind of a really interesting sort of 7 different parts that make, for, in his philosophy, a healthy mind. and I'll just read them off to you. It's focus time, play time, connecting time, physical time, time in, downtime, and sleep time. So Jessica and I are guilty. We put our bullet points out there of sort of healthy tips. One thought is, if you like other ones as well, kind of take a selection, make it a menu, put it into each one of those parts, and organize your day through a family meeting in the morning. And so you're already getting a healthy mind and also kind of connecting and all those other things. And I thought that might be very helpful. I actually use that tool with kids who are actually very highly addicted to video games, where I negotiate with the family. I say, okay, let's do 10 minutes of this, 15 minutes of this, half an hour of this. And they agree to that concept through this gentleman's philosophy. And it's been very successful. And I've tried it with a couple of kids in the current situation, but I think it might be quite helpful.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I can see that being really helpful for folks. I know a lot of parents are feeling stressed about sort of taking on this now new role of homeschool parent and what that means. And I think sort of taking that approach could lessen that burden and feeling a little bit overwhelmed about, oh my God, they got to get all this schoolwork done. So.
Well, also, if you think that menu, you know, you want your appetizer, your main course and your dessert, and if you have a list of things, you take our list or take other people's list and say, okay, let's put them in these different categories. And then you empower the kid to actually choose some of those so they feel like they're part of it.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Something else I might add about the pressure that parents are feeling right now around education and sort of this overnight being plunged into homeschooling is I would really encourage parents to be kind and compassionate to themselves. As parents, we're not going to be able to replace the education that our children were getting. Teachers are expert at this. They spend a very long time designing their lesson plans and sort of crafting the delivery of it. It's a very different setting when kids are in school than when they're at home. And even families that do homeschool don't do it in this context, right? They approach it in very different ways and often through a sense of community and preparation with other homeschooling families. So try to take a little bit of the pressure off. I think it's an opportunity for us to acknowledge our kids might get a little bit behind in math. They might get a little bit behind in reading. We're going to do the best that we can. But instead of focusing on what we're worried our kids won't learn, I would try to shift the focus to what is your child learning right now? What life skills are they gaining? What quality of connection as a family might be occurring here? You know, the bonds that can happen when a family goes into isolation for weeks on end might be significant, right? So really shifting towards the resilience model, and you might get behind in your math facts, but my hope is that you're going to be better prepared for whatever else comes in your life. And hopefully parents are modeling that and giving themselves some credit for that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. And I think that's important for parents to hear whose child may be receiving special ed services or additional services in the school that, you know, are needed for their development, but know that, you know, being home isn't gonna, you know, throw that all away. It's, you know, there is an opportunity for other learning to happen. So are there other things that you guys would like to add?
I think getting your kids and yourself outside as much as you can. I know things are changing rapidly. Some families have backyards, some families don't, but right now we're not under restriction along those lines. So we're still doing social distancing. So if you can get out and get out for a walk in the woods, maybe a walk on the beach, being in nature can be really kind of healing and restorative and calming. And it's an interesting thing. You know, I've talked to a lot of families where kids will kind of groan and whine and say, I don't want to go outside, or I don't want to go to the beach, or it's a little chilly out. And then that same kid an hour and a half later is saying, I don't want to leave. I don't want to, you know? So getting outside as much as you can. I think I'm trying at least in my home and for myself and with my kids to have twice a day regular outdoor time. Some days that's going great. Some days that's not going so great. But again, going back to basics and trying to think on a pretty simple level can be really powerful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I know it was raining outside and my kids were still running loops around our house. So it was a little chilly.
Also, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I also think it's important to have fun.
Yeah.
Be spontaneous, you know, how, like, I'll start little, you know, wars in my household with, like, you know, dish towels and things like that. Pump up the music and just start dancing. You'd be amazed at how, you know, you can get so much cleaned in 10 minutes with music. You know, and just the right attitude rather than just kind of like always on and always reminding, you know, let's get up and get it done, you know, and just blast the music and have fun.
Yeah, I love that. I love that for sure. So I know that we went back to the question about, you know, some kids may really need some extra support. And, you know, with the whole social distancing, people may not be feeling comfortable going into therapist's office. A therapist may not feel comfortable, you know, seeing patients. What can people do to, how can people access a virtual therapist in this situation?
So the majority of us are or have already transitioned to telehealth. So Ben, you're entirely telehealth right now, is that right?
Yep, 100%.
And I just wrapped up with in-person meetings at my office today. So starting next week, I'll be exclusively telehealth. And I really didn't have a lot of experience with it. I had done it a little bit here and there. And I'm actually finding it's going a lot more smoothly than I thought. And my clients are reporting, yeah, it felt weird for a couple minutes, but then it was fine. So the good news also is that there was just an emergency mandate released yesterday from the state, from the governor's office, mandating that insurance companies have to provide coverage for telehealth medical care, including behavioral health, mental health services, and that insurance companies must lift restrictions, including pre-authorization and things along those lines, and they have to cover it at the same reimbursement rate as face-to-face. So they can't apply that coverage to, you know, a really high deductible or a different copay. So there are definite sort of barriers that have been lifted literally just in the last, you know, 24 to 48 hours, which I'm really pleased with from sort of a consumer advocacy standpoint. So what I would recommend is do what you might typically do, right? So a lot of parents might ask other parents, have you worked with a therapist? Who might you recommend? Talk to your pediatrician's office, although quite frankly, they're actually probably really busy this week. So I'm not sure that that is the best next place. School guidance counselors often facilitate referrals, but also even just doing Google searches. The majority of clinicians already are equipped with telehealth or are actively working to create that. And so hopefully, you know, most of us are even doing our best to open up our schedules when and where we can for new clients or to increase frequency for existing clients.
Wonderful. That's great. That's great. So Jessica, could you share with us maybe your one Parenting Win moment that you've had over the last 6 days?
Awesome. Okay. So mine just happened an hour ago, which is both of my kids do karate. And they found out at the end of last week that the karate studio needed to close and completely understood why the owner of the dojo needed to make that decision. That's a big outlet for my kids. And it's sort of like family tradition, family ritual is that we're at the karate studio a couple times a week. My kids handled the disappointment of that just fine. And Mr. Randall said, I will be sending an email soon. So my kids an hour ago just did their very first karate practice via Zoom. And it started with most of the kids introducing each other and Mr. Randall to dogs, cats, other family members. But he was pretty able to, within just a few minutes, create some order and structure and routine. And I was watching my kids in my living room go through the same ritual that they've been doing for a long time at their karate studio. So they opened the same, they closed the lesson the same. And I was kind of running around thinking, like, this is pretty great. Pretty great.
Yeah, I love that. I love to see, that's what's been so remarkable about this is just seeing the community sort of come together in this and provide, you know, outlets and resources for folks to keep that connection going. It's just truly amazing. We did a, my I found out about an online or through Facebook, there's a Facebook Live dance class for preschoolers. And wow. Went on it and my daughter said, oh my goodness, that's so-and-so. And it was a girl from her class. It was we didn't know that the mother was a dance teacher and that she was at her school. So it was just so great to see her have that connection.
Right? Nice moment of connection. Yeah, that's huge. That's mm-hmm. And that goes back to that healthy mind that you were talking about, Ben.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So Ben, I know your girls are older, but what's your parenting moment for the...
So I have one daughter in goes to college in Montreal and one daughter that goes to college in Cleveland. So my parenting win was to get them both here safe, not with without sore throats, coughing, and fevers. But also to navigate that, young people's thought that they're totally independent, but they're not quite. And, now they're home and they want to see boyfriends and friends and other people. And it's like, can we just hold on just a little bit? And they're very thoughtful young ladies, but making sure they could get home and safe was a very important win for us. So
absolutely. I'm so glad that they're both here safe. So that's wonderful. Great. Well, I so appreciate you both being a part of this show, and I'll be sure to link to all the resources that you've shared with us to our listeners. And I hope you all stay healthy and thank you again. I'm sure we'll be talking again in the future.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right.
We enjoyed it.
Thank you again to Ben and Jessica for being a part of today's show. I think my biggest takeaway with hearing them speak is really making sure we're checking in with ourselves and our kids on how they're doing and how they're coping. But more importantly, use this as an opportunity for fun. Be silly, play pranks on our kids, turn up the music, and use this as a time for connection. So as always, I'd love to hear your feedback on the show. Let me know what you think. I'd also love to hear what else you need. What are the questions, concerns that you're struggling with the most? Okay, so I hope everyone is staying healthy, staying sane, and I will talk to you again next week.